It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Second Street in Silvis, Illinois is only a block and a half long, but over 100 men from that street have served in the U.S. military. Eight of those men died in service, more than from any other street in the country. Coming up later this hour, I will talk with a filmmaker who has made a new documentary about one of the many men from that street who served. But first, the true story of one woman's fight for survival during World War II, as told by her daughter, Claudia Woodson Deers of Olwine, Iowa, in the new book, Triumph Over Destiny. Hello, Claudia.
Hi, Charity. How are you today?
Oh, good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, I'm very happy and thrilled to be here to talk to you and the audience and all the readers that have already read this book.
And this is a novelization of a true story that you learned from your mother. How much of your own creativity did you have to put into recreating this story?
Well, I'll tell you what. I actually voice taped them for a period of 10 years.
Wow.
And otherwise, they just didn't talk about the things that are in the book because it was very hard. It was very, very emotional for them to talk about these things. And being the curious child that I was, I thought, you know, I'm going to tape them. Hopefully they will answer me, you know, and let me know some of these things. Because I used to hear bits and pieces when I was just a child. And I would hear older sisters, I have older siblings, you know, talk to my mother and father. And I, you know, I'd be around the table listening when maybe they didn't know I was listening.
Right.
And I would just hear things, and my curiosity just really got the best of me as I got a little bit older. And even at age 13, I remember just asking her tons of questions about the war and just things that may have happened to both her and my father. And she was always a great storyteller and was willing to tell me things age appropriately, but she was willing to tell me a lot of her story verbally. And then as I got older and was an adult, I began taping both my mother and father. And boy, I'll tell you, they just have a very, very compelling story.
Absolutely.
Unlike many I've heard. So,
well, let's go back in time to your mother's childhood, and we'll start with her. She was born in Austria, and as she grew, she moved with her parents to a small town in Austria, a very small village.
Correct.
Bleiberg, Austria. And she graduated from the sixth grade. This was a very poor village. And she ended up having to go to work in the lead mines almost right away, working right alongside her father, right?
That's correct. As a matter of fact, the mountain where they extracted the lead, actually you could see from their house. So they did not have far to go. They did walk to work, and she had to work hours and hours on end in that lead mine at age 14 just to help the family and to help the family survive and make ends meet. So,
and during this time that she and your grandfather were working so hard to keep the family going, he had two jobs, and she was working alongside him in the lead mine sometimes for up to 15 hours a day. Of course, this was also a time of intense political upheaval in Europe.
Correct.
1937 into 1938. And your grandfather was a very opinionated man. He had very strong feelings about Hitler and the rising Nazi party.
He was. He was very opinionated. He would talk about Hitler's rhetoric and was in thorough disagreement with what he stood for. His policies, when he came into Austria and tried to have the Austrian people buy into his rhetoric, as I call it, he did not agree with anything the man had to say. He didn't agree with any of his policies. He didn't agree with much of anything that his cohorts, you know, had to say. And that was well known, and he was not afraid to speak his mind, which eventually got the entire family into trouble. So, and as you read the book, you know, you can kind of figure out, I don't want to give away the book, you can kind of figure out things that happened to both him and my mother through the book. And some of that was due to his resistance towards
his willingness to speak his mind. Well, and of course, Austria was annexed by Germany because, as of course, Hitler was trying to take over all of Europe. And although this was a very small, out-of-the-way village in Austria, Hitler himself actually came to the village. Can you tell me about that event?
Yeah, my mother tells this story probably much better than I do. But when Hitler came to Bleiburg, what he was doing, it was right during the Anschluss, or right shortly after the Anschluss, and that's in 1938 of March. He came to her little school in Bleiburg, and the village was very, very small. And what he was trying to do is he's trying to recruit as many supporters as he could. And he'd go to all these little local schools, community gathering places, and he would have people come. And a matter of fact, they were required to come. And so my grandfather, just to let you know, did not end up coming. So right there, he showed, you know, the resistance for his policies and procedures. And my mother actually attended a seminar at her grade school where he and Hess also showed up. So, yeah, it was quite an experience for her as a 14-year-old girl. And she had gone with friends. And it's something that she never forgot. And I don't want to say much more than that because I think I'm going to give away some of the excitement
Claudia,
in the book.
But please share with us the story today. And you know, there are so many details in the book that people will get from reading. But this is such a pivotal moment in your mother's life and also such an incredibly unusual. I'm sure many people in Austria and Germany at that time were face to face with Hitler. But for so many of us, it's unthinkable.
Yeah, well, as I said, he came in to all these small villages and cities, and he wanted to hopefully gain their support for his policies and what he wanted to do in Austria. And so he required the entire town, you know, to come to this seminar. And when my mother went to this seminar, she went with girlfriends because my grandfather refused. And a matter of fact, he scolded her for even thinking about going to such a thing. But being a 14-year-old young girl, not knowing anything about politics and just being curious and wanting to go see, you know, what's going on with this big crowd that was gathering, her and some girlfriends went. And when she walked into the school, she said it was packed with people. And everybody was standing and talking and everybody whispering and some people afraid to say what was really on their mind. Others, you know, openly supporting Hitler, too, at the same time. There were swastikas, huge posters of swastikas all over the school walls. And there was also pictures of Hitler himself. Now, Göring, Hess, and Hitler all attended that meeting at the school. And so as things progressed, they had everybody sit eventually. And once things were organized inside the building and inside that auditorium, my mother just happened to be placed in the front row where Hitler stood directly in front of her at his podium. So he was probably only just a few foot from her giving his speech. And then the other two men joined him, you know, later. But after the assembly was over, all three men came from behind the podium, and they wanted to greet people, and they wanted to shake their hands. And again, they were trying to gain the support of the Austrian people. You know, they had talked about a lot of false promises that they were going to make happen. They were going to build the economy. Everybody was going to have a job. There wouldn't be any poverty. Austria's economic situation would highly improve. So anyway, when they were all done talking and giving their speeches, they came out into the crowd. Well, one of the very first people that Hitler walked up to was my mother, Carolina. And she was so nervous, you know, who she had heard about this man, you know, and she had heard about her father's opinion regarding this man. So first of all, just meeting Hitler scared her. Second of all, her father knowing that Hitler was as close in proximity to her also scared her, because she thought, my father is going to think this is horrible, me standing this close to this man, you know, and what am I going to say if he comes up to me, and what am I supposed to do? Well, because she was, again, just 14 years old, as all the men circled around, first Hitler came across, and he stood directly in front of her, and he held out his hand, and he wanted to shake her hand. Well, she shook his hand, and then, you know, he did the Heil Hitler. But, and supposedly she was supposed to say that back to him, but she did not. She was fearful, you know, just being in that big crowd. And so she did not say that back to him. But during that assembly that all of those people attended, Hitler and also Hess and Göring, all during their speeches, told the audience that instead of greeting, say, your neighbor, your friend, your family in the morning, instead of saying good morning, you're supposed to say Heil Hitler. And that was an expectation of him. So it'd be, Charity, if I would meet you on the street, instead of saying, hello, Charity, how are you? I would need to say Heil Hitler first.
And not just to people you meet on the street, but to your family members.
But to your own family members, too.
Claudia, we're going to take just a short break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Okay.
I'm talking with Claudia Woodson-Dears of Olwine, Iowa. She has written the new novel, Triumph Over Destiny, but it's a novel based on the true story of her mother and her father, their fight to survive during World War II, and their eventual travel to the United States and to Olwine, Iowa. We'll continue this conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about two true stories from World War II. Coming up in a few minutes, I'll talk with filmmaker Kelly Rundle about the new documentary, Letters Home to Hero Street. Right now with me is Claudia Woodson-Dears of Olwine, Iowa. She's author of the new book, Triumph Over Destiny. It's a novel based on the true story of her mother and her father and their fights to survive during World War II. You can find out more about it on the website triumphoverdestiny.com. And just before the break, Claudia, we were talking about that moment when your mother came face to face with Adolf Hitler and shook Adolf Hitler's hand. And it was a terrifying moment for her. It was also a very pivotal moment in her life, although she wouldn't know that until a little bit later when there was a knock on the family door. This was a few months after this event?
Yes. Yes, it was very shortly after the event took place.
And what happened?
Well, what happened is, just like Charity said, all of a sudden there was a knock at the door. And because of the business my grandfather was in, he was a caretaker for a cemetery and also helped bury the bodies of the individuals who were deceased. And so all the townspeople would come knocking on their door at all hours of the night. So it wasn't anything new to hear a knock at the door. But that day, my mother ran to the door to see what was going on because her father was busy. And so when she opened the door, there were soldiers dressed in full uniform carrying guns. And they just bolted their way into the house. Didn't give her time to open the door. They basically pushed the door in. And here she is only, at that time, she had turned 15 years old. And so here is this young lady standing there with these very tall German soldiers, and they told her right away that she needed to come with them. Her mother and father were not in the same room at the time, and so she was yelling, of course, for her mother and father to please come help her. These men were here, and they wanted to take her away. And so as she yelled, you know, come quickly, I need help. Her mother was the first to hear her. Her father was off in a different room and didn't hear her cries. And so her mother came. She also had a little baby sister at the time. I believe she was 6 months old. And so her mother was carrying that baby when she came in. And here are these soldiers, and they just stared at her, at my mother's mother, and said, "You're coming with us. Your daughter's coming with us. She needs to leave in just a few minutes." And of course, her own mother was terrified that they were going to steal her daughter away. But instead of, you know, breaking down emotionally, she did challenge the soldiers at first, asking them, "Why? Why are you doing this to my daughter? What is going on here? Why do you want to take my daughter?" Well, in hindsight, years later, we decided that, and this is all speculation, because of Valentin, who is my mother's father, because of his resistance against Hitler's policies, and he would verbally say many, many, many things, you know, in regards to the Nazi Party that were not supportive, and they knew about it. And so, again, it was speculation, but we feel this is the reason they were there then, to take my mother as a punishment. In the meantime, of course, the house was totally chaotic. These soldiers are standing in the doorway. The door is wide open. The wind is blowing in. You know, my mother started crying. Her mother started crying. The baby started crying that she was holding. By that time, her father had come down to see what in the world was going on, and all the commotion. And here, you know, were those German soldiers standing there telling all of them she needed to leave, and she needed to leave with them quickly. And she was able to come get a few things out of her room, but then she needed to go.
And where did they take her?
Well, what happened was they loaded, they just took her to a very close by train station. And they had to walk to this train station. All she got to bring with her was a tiny little bag, and she had to just grab, you know, some very, very few mementos that she felt were something that she did not want to leave behind. And so they walked them to the train station, walked her to the train station, I should say. And then when she got to the train station, there were all these other women that they had already captured from other towns prior, where they had stopped. And they all, some of them had similar stories. Some of them were a little bit different. What was going to happen next, however, was that not only were they going to abduct her and many other women that were already on the train, but they were going to make several more stops, and they were heading for Germany. So
they were taken to Germany, and we know a lot about the work camps that were set up by the Nazis in Germany and in Eastern Europe. They were not taken to a work camp, but they were basically given to Germans as slaves?
Yes. Yeah, they were basically slave labor. So all these women that were herded into these boxcars were dropped somewhere in Germany and given to farmers, restaurants, anywhere where they could work for these individuals as free labor. And I call it slave labor, of course, because they, at first, were not getting paid anything, and they would work from like 7 in the morning till 10:30 at night.
Right, and they would be killed if they left.
Right, right. And they were watched, and what happened was you would have a German officer pop in and out of either the farm they were located on, or the restaurant, or the store, wherever they had placed them, and they would say, "Well, you know, how is this person doing?" If they weren't doing well, then they could possibly be placed in the hardcore concentration camps, where, of course, they would have been treated much worse.
Your mother was placed at a restaurant.
Yes.
In the novel, you tell the story of how she was placed there with another girl who was about her age.
Correct.
And they were not treated well at first, but as time went on and the couple who ran the restaurant and basically owned them at that time realized that came to terms with their humanity and realized that they were humans and they were people and started to treat them better. Is that how your mother told the story?
Yes, that's it. It took a while. I mean, for them to realize that they were indeed individuals, intelligent young ladies, and that they were trustable and also very easy to like. So sooner or later, it was probably, I'd say, a good 6 months at least it took for the owners to really gain any trust in them and to, I guess, treat them as they would, I would say, somebody that they've met off the street. Because I don't want to say they were friends, because I think that would be over-implying a friendship.
Right. They did start to pay them a little bit.
Yep, they did start to receive a stipend, a very, very small stipend, but it was enough so that occasionally they could buy some little things for themselves, buy a dress maybe after they'd saved.
And they were allowed to write to their families?
Yeah, well, they were not allowed to write to their families the first couple months. I'm not sure what the reasoning was for that. But they weren't allowed to write. But after a few months, they could write, and they could write every day if they wanted to. So they were able to correspond in writing with their families as often as they liked after the first few months. So
after things got significantly better, and although they were still living with this family, they were still working 15-hour days and being paid very little, the girls got up enough courage to ask if they might be allowed to go to a dance.
That's right. They had heard talk in town. And of course, when you're working in a restaurant, you have all these customers come in. And they all talked in gaiety about, you know, the big dances that they have in Hanover. And so they overheard, you know, these people talking. And of course, at this time, they were only like 16 years old. And they, regardless of what was going on around them, and they were only 16, and they still wanted to do some things that 16-year-old girls would like to do, and that is going to a dance. So they did get the courage to ask the owners, you know, is there any way they could possibly get off to go to the dance? And at that time, he had loosened up, as I would say, and was giving them a little bit more freedom. And also, there was a trust building between them, and he agreed to let them go.
And your mother went to this dance and had another life-changing moment. She met a German soldier, which that kind of blows my mind a little bit, to think that meeting a German soldier wasn't something that immediately put her on guard. But she met a young, handsome German soldier, and they fell in love.
Yes, that is exactly true. He was a fighter pilot and flew in the Luftwaffe, and he was, again, like you said, very handsome, very well-spoken, very kind, very giving, and if you ask her, he knew the right things to say to a woman, so it just sounded like he swept her right off her feet, you know, the first time they met, and after they had met even that first time, they had made the decision to stay in contact, because what he needed to do was to go back and fly. And so he was never able to stay long. He had, you know, short leaves of a week or two at a time. So when he would come home.
So we will skip ahead quite a bit. They got married, had two beautiful little girls, and of course were never together for very long. She lived with his family, which was a very difficult situation because they considered her to be a Auslander, a foreigner, and had a hard time accepting her. But he did not make it through the war. And as the war went on and was coming to a close, there were other people. She continued to live and work on the farm, but there were other people around that she came into contact, other forced laborers or other slaves.
Right.
And one of them was your father. Tell me about him.
That's correct. He actually, when Hitler overthrew Yugoslavia in 1941, his platoon was taken. And when that did happen, I mean, Yugoslavia was taking taken. My father, his story is in 8 days, but it was just a bit longer than that. And what I'm thinking there is by the time his platoon was attacked and taken prisoners, it was probably 8 days from that day in his mind. So in the book, it says 8 days. In the history books, you're going to read more like 11 days that it took for the invasion of Yugoslavia and Greece. But anyway, he was taken as a war prisoner in 1941, and he was taken to a concentration camp in a town called Klinkendorf. And, well, actually, he didn't land at Klinkendorf first. That was a second location that he ended up. But he was in a camp called Sandbostel, which is very, very close to Klinkendorf. And he was held prisoner there for about 2 months. And what would happen in those prison camps is they wanted to farm some of those individuals out to work on the local farms to help with chores, field work, so on and so forth. And if you behaved and you seemed trustable, you may be one of those lucky few that get out of the concentration camp and get to go work in the fields. And so he happened to be one of those lucky war prisoners that then eventually got placed on a farm and eventually placed on the same farm my mother did and worked. And that's basically how they met.
One of the things that was so striking from your novel is how long after the war ended that life continued to be so incredibly difficult and so incredibly dangerous.
Yeah. It was many, many, many years after the war ended. You know, when individuals who have not gone through a war think, well, the war ended, you know, in 1945, World War II, it actually did not end for the people, you know, who were involved in the war. What happened in Germany is once the Americans and the British came in and the war ended in April, they released all the war prisoners that had been held captive for years and years and years in those concentration camps. And while they were held in those concentration camps, they were treated terribly. They were tortured, some of them killed, some of them, you know, limbs were missing, broken, they were starved. They just terrible, terrible things happened to these people in the concentration camps. And the Russian population was one of the populations that got treated the very poorest in the concentration camps. And when they were let out of those prison camps in 1945, they had a vendetta against the German people, regardless of what their life had been like. You know, for instance, my mother and my mother's father, and a matter of fact, her first husband, who was the German pilot, and his family actually did not support Hitler. And so, irregardless, the Russians, POWs who came out of those camps, didn't really care.
Right. They just wanted revenge.
Right. They just wanted revenge. And, you know, that was understandable for how terribly they had been treated. Yet somebody innocent, you know, that really, you know, had not actually tried to support, you know, the prisoners as best as they could, through a situation like that, were still condoned as the enemy and, you know, somebody that they wanted to harm.
So the war was followed by years of incredible danger and deprivation.
Yes.
By your family. Eventually, and we're nearly out of time, but eventually your father and mother emigrated to the United States.
Yes.
And they landed in Olwine, Iowa.
They did land in Olwine, Iowa, into flat ground where, you know, they were not used to that because my mother came from a very large mountain range and climbed a mountain every day of her life when she was a child. But I'll tell you, they really enjoyed living in Owine, and Owine was unbelievable.
You have a wonderful picture of all of their descendants. How many children did they end up having together?
Well, I have seven. There are seven of us girls. And she did have a baby that did die. And that is not counting Annalisa.
Okay.
And, you know, we didn't talk about her, and we probably won't.
No.
By the way it sounds. So, okay.
So many, many, many children came from that union, and there are many grandchildren.
Oh, many, many. You know, I'd have to do a head count for grandchildren. I don't even know how many there are. I should have done that before I came.
Claudia, thank you so much for talking with me today and for sharing your story.
You're very welcome. I'm glad you enjoyed the book.
Claudia Woodson-Deers of Old Wine, Iowa. She's written the new book, Triumph Over Destiny, that tells the story of her mother and her father and their journey through World War II, ending up in Old Wine, Iowa. You can find out more on her website, triumphoverdestiny.com. This is Talk of Iowa.